This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Jason Ratliff here with Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo in our, well, our second post-draft podcast, but the dust has settled a bit. We will go over the draft in detail. We did a sort of immediate reaction last week just after the draft was over. We'll dig into the draft a little bit more, and we'll look ahead to the 2022 draft class as well. Never too early for that. We're going to talk about a trio of call-ups to the big leagues: Red Sox outfielder Jaron Duran, Angels outfielder Brandon Marsh, and Dodgers right-hander Josiah Gray, all called up recently. And we will take a look at the newest top 100 prospect, that is Bryson Stott. And we'll wrap up with the mailbag. Jim, Jonathan, have you had a little bit of time to take a breath since the mega draft futures game weekend?
Yeah, our weekend last weekend was less complicated than the weekend before that. So,
well, that's setting the bar.
Yes.
So, a little bit, although the signings have been coming in fast and furious, the sort of truncated amount of time to sign guys, lots and lots of signings to report.
Yeah. One thing we didn't notice when we were talking about all the changes with the calendar is only 19 days from the end of the draft to the signing deadline, which is usually it's pretty much a full month. So, things are getting done quicker. If we're requesting schedule changes for next year, I'm not sure why the signing deadline's on a Sunday. They moved the trade deadline so it wouldn't be on the weekend, but why couldn't the signing deadline have been maybe during the work week? But the signing deadline is on a Sunday, which is kind of odd.
Hopefully we won't get back to, earlier days when the signings really came down to the wire and, there's like a cloud of dust in the final hour to the final few minutes with all the signings coming in. So hopefully we don't revert back to that. It seems like a lot of the signings are coming in early. We have 10 first rounders whose signings have been reported to this point. And of course, you two, Jim and Jonathan, are, reporting these signings. Jonathan, you mentioned fast and furious. They're coming in, and you guys, if anyone is not following, I doubt there are many people listening to the podcast that don't follow Jim and Jonathan and MLB Pipeline on Twitter. But if you're not, you definitely should be. Jim and Jonathan are breaking a lot of these signings on Twitter, and we're keeping track of them on the Draft Tracker. That's MLB.com/draft/tracker. The same tracker that was used during the draft to put the picks up live as they happened has the pick value and the signing bonus for every player who was drafted. So guys, so far 10 first rounders signed. I know last year, unusual year with only 5 rounds, but every single player signed. And I was curious your thoughts going into this signing period. What's the over under on number of players that do not sign? Or maybe that's too difficult to answer for the full 20 rounds. Maybe looking just
10,
at
10, maybe
10 rounds. Yeah.
20 rounds, I'm not going to get. I mean, it's a little bit hard because I do think the vast majority, well, there aren't that can be that many. I would say most of the guys who don't sign the first 10 rounds, I would think would arise from failed physicals. And we're just not going to know that in advance. But I would set the over under. I mean, the last time we had a 10-round draft, there were two guys who didn't sign. I would set the over under at either 1.5 or 2.5, depending on which way you want your betting action to go there, Jason. But I think it would be very similar.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I was thinking in my head, two-ish, you know, I appreciate the half to make sure that we don't.
Well, we were trying to get the betting push on both sides.
Yes, anyway, right. So if you set it at 1.5, I'll take the over. If you set it at 2.5, I'll take the under. How's that?
So we're both anticipating two. I mean, in terms of the first round, which is what everybody always seems to wonder about, I think they're all going to sign, barring failed physicals. I think the guy who might perhaps be the most difficult would be Jordan Lawler, who at one point we had ranked as a top prospect in the draft. He wound up at number 3 in our final rankings, and he went 6th to the Diamondbacks. He's 19 years old, so he'd be draft eligible 2 years from now. And I think he has a number. You know, he did not, the Diamondbacks did not take him with an agreement in place as to what it was going to cost to sign him. I think he's got a number. I don't know what that number is. And if he doesn't get it, I think he'll go to Vanderbilt for 2 years. I do think the Pirates kicked the tires, you know, very hard on Jordan Lawler and Marcelo Meyer. And so I'm going to assume that Jordan Lawler's number is greater than $6.5 million, because that's what the Pirates signed Henry Davis for. But he'd be the one, if it came down to money in the first round, that might be the most difficult sign.
I think that's right. And I do think he is going to sign. I don't think there are going to be any first rounders who don't sign this year. That's my guess.
And I'm with you on that.
Have there been any surprises to you guys so far in the signings that have been reported?
No.
Not in terms of players signing, but in terms of the number.
Not really. I mean, look, I mean, it's now become like, it almost seems like getting the guy to take under slot is more important sometimes than just the pure talent on guys, you know, somewhat in the first round. But no, I mean, I think you could kind of look. I mean, we're not going to do this. We could run through the first 50 picks and go over slot, at slot, under slot, and probably be right on like 48 of them. So no, I we saw yesterday, you know, Ben Cadorna got a $3 million bonus in the second round from the Royals, but like, we knew his asking price was $3 million. And when the Royals took Frank Moscato in the first round, you knew he was going to be under slot. I just figured Cadorna was going to get his $3 million. So no, has anything surprised you, Jonathan?
Not really. Not so far. Can I take this opportunity to answer the very many people on Twitter who complain about this bonus system, but don't totally understand how it works? Would
sure.
that be appropriate? I mean, we're still going to get it, but you know, basically what's been happening is, as we report these signings and someone, you know, a college senior signs for $5,000 in the 6th round, people have lobbed many complaints, from tying it into suppressed minor league wages to thinking that their agents must be terrible. Everything in that bucket of these poor college seniors are only getting this much. And so I've responded to many of them.
Foolish.
You know, but the important thing is that, you know, Jim and I were talking about this. Nobody gets picked in the 7th round without basically agreeing to sign for that amount. That's how they manipulate the bonus pool. Now, if you want to have a conversation about, excuse me, I get choked up when talking about bonus pool systems.
We're here for
very
you.
Emotional.
It's okay, Jonathan. It's okay.
Thank you. I feel seen and I feel heard. That, you know, you want to talk about whether that system works or not. That's fine. You could discuss that. It's not a free market kind of situation here. And these players would not get drafted if they turned down that money. And what we started seeing, a couple years ago, is that the seniors who are a little bit better, maybe a little bit more talented, maybe have a better opportunity, and they get offered that. They know, or they get a sense, you know, that if they turn down $10,000 in the 7th round, they may get $20,000 in the 12th round, where it doesn't count against your bonus pool. So the players that are getting taken in the top 10 rounds, it's even a deeper dive, which, you know, is reflected in Jim and I scrambling a little bit as day 2 goes on to get information about some of these players. So, you know, these guys are getting an opportunity to play professional baseball that might not have been provided them if they don't agree to that amount. So, you know, I hope people who listen to this, who are also active on Twitter, remind themselves of that, because pretty much every signing that I reported the other day that was that, you know, senior sign kind of thing had people thinking that there was some sort of, you know, financial or economical abuse going on here. And that's just not the case.
And once I'll make a suggestion that I think, I don't know if it would totally solve the problem, but would ameliorate it. So the way the draft works, if you don't sign a player in the first 10 rounds, you lose his bonus pool money. And for the first three rounds, that makes perfect sense because you get the pick back next year. Because otherwise, just using the Pirates as the number one pick as an example, let's say the Pirates took a guy and didn't sign him at number one, they'd still get to use his $8.4 million in this year's bonus pool if that money didn't go away. And then they would get the number two pick in next year's draft, so it'd be double dipping. So you shouldn't do that. But since you don't get back picks in rounds 4 through 10, if you don't sign them, instead of having all this gamesmanship, why don't we just say every team's bonus pool is based on the pick value of their picks in the first three rounds, and then we give every team, you can look, it's between $2 and $2.5 million. You could give every team the same amount, or you could stagger it. Just add $2 to $2.5 million on top of your bonus pool total for the first three rounds, and you get the money in rounds 4 through 10, regardless of whether you sign the guys. You could do it that way too. That way, maybe you take a run at you know, two guys who are tough signs and you sign one of them. But like that would be at least something that might make some of that go away. Then I wouldn't have to try to find, using the Pirates example again, you know, Mike Jarvis, San Diego State shortstop, signing him for $7,500 in the sixth round. I could take a guy of sixth round value, and if I run out of money by the time I get to my 10th round pick, so be it.
Problem solved.
There you go. Maybe not totally, but that would be a step. So when I become draft czar, my first move will be to hire Jonathan as my competitive balance draft czar. And then my second will be to have a uniform bonus signing pick value for rounds 4 through 10 for everybody.
All right. So last week on the podcast, we talked about your favorite pick of the we said at the time, like, we could do this for the entire draft. Well, we're not going to do it for the entire
20 rounds.
Let's do it for the top five rounds. Your favorite pick in each of the first five rounds. Jonathan, you want to start us off here?
So competitive balance round, does that count as round one or round two?
Why don't we do separate competitive balance round just as a bonus?
All right.
Okay.
So we'll do seven rounds covering the first five.
All right. So my favorite first round pick, it's funny because I think this is going to be similar to what we did last time, but I'm going to go different. I'm going to say that my favorite first round pick was Chase Petty, the Twins taking him at 26. Just because I like the risk reward there, and you know that the Twins went for the high upside. He, you know, is kind of not the biggest right-hander in the world. He throws 100. High schoolers who throw that hard. But, you know, I think he's really talented and has a better feel to pitch. So than people think. So I'm going to pick Chase Petty.
I'm not sure if I'm going to use this strategy for each round, but I think I went with this guy last week. I'm going to, you know, there are a lot of great values in round one because guys kind of went all over the place as teams were shopping for discounts. I'm still going to go with Marcelo Meyer going to the Red Sox at number four. I think they got the best player in the draft. This is the highest they've picked. I keep using the line since I've been alive because they picked third in 1967 in June, and I was born in October.
Didn't you cover that draft, Jim?
No, I was still in the womb. I was probably barely conscious of it, perhaps. But no, I just think getting, you know, when you have your highest pick in you know, what is that, 53, 54 years, and you get the best player in the draft, that's pretty good timing. So I like the Marcelo Meyer pick at number four for the Red Sox in the first round.
All right, Jim, I know you're a big proponent of the serpentine draft. Are we doing this? is this a snake draft?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're not really drafting these players. It's more favorites, so I'm fine. You could have Jonathan go first, or we could bounce back and forth. I'm fine with either.
Jonathan, supplemental pick from the first round.
I want to say, by the way, I left Marcelo Meyer because I knew, Jim, you would want to talk about
it. That's very kind of you.
I'm a team player.
No, I'm going to get choked up.
Competitive balance round A, I'm going to go with Joe Mack, the high school catcher from upstate New York, who the Marlins took number 31 overall. That was after they got Khalil Watson in the first round. So it was a really good day one for them. And Mack was, you know, arguably the best all around catching prospect in the entire class. You know, definitely stays behind the plate, left-handed hitter with power to come. So I was very excited for what the Marlins did on day one, getting two kind of high upside high school up the middle players in Watson, and then getting Mack at pick 31.
See, I'm torn here because it's like there's so many of these guys in the supplemental first round of mine, including three sweet swinging middle infielders. And as much as I love Nolan Miller and I waxed poetic about him at the end of day one on MLB Network, I'm going to go with Ty Madden to the Tigers here. You know, we had Ty Madden ranked ninth. There was talk he was going to slide. There was talk that, you know, his fastball metrics weren't compatible with what, you know, the analytically minded teams wanted. I still didn't think he was going to get to 32. I still think that's a steal for the Tigers. You know, this guy's, you know, we could talk about his fastball metrics, but he's got plenty of fastball velocity. He just throws it down in the zone rather than up in the zone. He's got a good slider. He's got feel for changeup. He knows how to pitch. He's strong. I really like Ty Madden. And you pair him with Jackson Jobe, who they got at three, and they got two potential frontline pitchers with their first two picks before the second round. So I will go Ty Madden here in the supplemental first round.
All right, moving on to round two, Jonathan.
Well, I feel, yeah, you know what? I think I'm going to kind of pick the obvious and take Anthony Solometo, who was the first pick on day two. You know, we had a sense, you know, with the Pirates taking Henry Davis, that they were going to save money and be aggressive. You know, Jim had heard that they were going to take Bubba Chandler. That happened later on. Probably talk about him in just a bit, but Solometo was, you know, the top high school lefty in the class. Some people thought, you know, after Jobe that maybe he had put himself in position to be the second best high school arm overall. Ton of upside, funky delivery, really good stuff. 6'5". He's going to throw harder. You know, this is a high upside guy. And as we're recording this, the Pirates actually sent out a release saying they had signed him. I don't think we have bonus information yet.
No, we do. Jim... 2.8.
Oh, that's right.
2.8 million.
Jim's already even tweeted it out. So they get him for 2.8 million. Slot, it was just under 2 million. So some of the money savings from Henry Davis and those seniors later on helped the Pirates do that. You know, but really, really good stuff. And had been slotted to go to North Carolina, but obviously that's over with, and he'll begin his pro career.
All right, Jim, your second rounder.
I'm going to go with Ben Caderna, who I talked about before. He kind of intrigued me when I was working on some area code game stuff last summer. your classic projectable high school pitcher, 6'3", listed at 175, really athletic. And, you know, you don't need projection to get excited about this guy. He's 92, 95, up to 97 with the fastball. He's got a sharp slider that hit 87 this spring. He's got advanced feel for a fading changeup, good delivery. Throw strikes, really like him. And you know, like, it's one thing when you're cutting money for the sake of cutting money, you know, 75,000 here, 100,000 there, just because you can on college guys. But when the Royals went out and got Frank Mozzicato in the first round at number 7, and obviously he was giving a discount pick and we were all surprised. Nobody saw that one coming. You know, what Jonathan just said about Solometo, you could say some of that stuff about Mozzicato too. I know there were teams that thought Mozzicato might be the best lefty in the draft, you know, just like they were about Solometo or Jordan Wicks, who the Cubs took. And you know, for the Royals, you weren't going to get Mozzicato if you didn't take him at 7. But, you know, so they fell in love with Mozzicato. Maybe it's kind of like the Braves fall in love with Ian Anderson. They take Mozzicato, they save money, and then they come and get a huge upside pitcher in Ben Caderna. So I liked Ben Caderna in the second round, pairing him with Mozzicato in the first.
Jim, I was internally predicting that you might take the other Missouri team's pick there with the Cardinals, with Joshua Baez at
Maybe. I also thought about Wes Caff, too, for the White Sox, because they considered him as with their first-round pick. There's too many good options here. I limit myself to one pick, finally, instead of giving you multiple names, and then you just draw me back in. Spencer Schwellenbach intrigues me, too, like as a two-way guy. So plenty of intriguing picks. See, now I'm blaming you when I pick four guys in each round the rest of the way.
All right, Jonathan. Competitive, like, balanced round pick.
I mean, I feel like I should let Jim go first, just because I'm going to – or either that, or I'm just going to end up picking all the Pirates picks in the top three.
Well, I'm not going to take Lonnie White Jr., so I won't help you there. But
okay. Well, you know, so then I will take Lonnie White Jr. Pirates got him at 64 overall. Was slated to go to Penn State to play football as a wide receiver, and play baseball there, super athletic, plus speed, can play center field. The interesting thing with him is that last summer he participated in some events and actually showed, decent feel to hit against good competition, and then didn't have like as great of a spring, so people weren't exactly sure. And then of course how much does he want to play baseball comes into play. Clearly the Pirates feel confident that this is the direction he wants to go in. This will be another overslot signing. Pick value is just a touch over $1 million, and they'll have to go well over that to sign him away from his football commitment. But tremendous ceiling just because of the size and the athleticism.
All right, Jim, one pick.
I will just pick one here. Peyton Wilson's a guy who's intrigued me all spring. This guy, he just has a lot going on, tool-wise. He's a switch hitter. He can be a little aggressive at the plate, but he's got good pop for 5'9" guy. He's got plus speed. He's got a well above average arm. He's got instincts, range, and hands. So even though he was announced as a second baseman, I wonder if he could play shortstop. I'd at least try him there. He could play center. He's caught before, so he's really interesting there as well. And he's got bloodlines. I mean, his two older brothers both played Alabama. John Parker Wilson was a quarterback who set a bunch of school records, have since been broken. And his brother Ross still holds the Crimson Tide freshman home run record with 15. So I just think this guy, there were a lot of second basemen or players who are going to wind up at second base drafted in this year's draft in early rounds. For some reason, that was a strong suit of this draft, but he's got better tools than almost any second baseman you'll ever see. So I really like Peyton Wilson. So apparently I like the Royals draft a lot, which maybe more than I even realized.
Thought maybe one of you would have taken Adrian Del Castillo there, a guy who I want to say early on in the mocks was a guy that was you guys had going in the top, 10 to 15?
When we did
Then he started playing.
When we did a not a mock mock early in the season, maybe before the season, and I think Jonathan must have gone first. I had the even number picks. I picked Adrian Del Castillo number 4 overall because I really liked the bat, and then he had a disappointing year. So there's potential for upside value there for sure. But once again, you're trying to make us talk about multiple players. You're never going to cure me of my affliction, Jason, by doing this.
This is how I'm trying to get you over it.
We should move to the third round before I start talking about Reed Trimble.
Round 3, Jonathan, hurry.
I'm going to leave the Pirates pick for Jim, and I'm going to
Kevin Copps.
I'm not going to go Kevin Copps. I'm going to go Jacob Steinmetz, because this is a favorite pick, right? And third rounder. You made sort of news, especially in the Jewish community, because he is an observant Orthodox Jew, and that's never happened before. There was another one taking Ellie Kligman in the 20th round, which was amazing. And I think I told this story last week, but the Diamondbacks took him because they like him as a pitcher. And he's 6'5" and was up to 94, 95 when he went down to Florida. He's from New York originally. And can really spin a breaking ball. That's probably his best attribute, is plus breaking ball with really high spin rates. And he's going to start his pro career, and this is something that we've not seen before. And I just love that they liked him as a pitcher, and that they're going to work with him to sort of figure out how he can do this, you know, because he's willing to pitch, you know, on our Sabbath, which goes Friday sundown to Saturday sundown, but he's got to be within walking distance, you know, of the ballpark, and there he keeps kosher, so there's going to be, you know, sort of food considerations there, but they're excited to work with him, and it was just exciting to see that happen.
Well, I will go with Bubba Chandler as my favorite third round pick just because of the tremendous value here. And as Jonathan noted, so I had a team picking behind the Pirates telling me as we went into day two that he thought they were hearing the Pirates were going to take Bubba Chandler or Lonnie White with that pick at the top of the second round. And they took Solomito, and then they came back and they took White, and then they took Chandler in the third round. And, you know, announced him as a pitcher. You know, there were some teams on him as a shortstop, even some first round interest as a shortstop, but super athletic guy, you know, Clemson scholarship offers a quarterback up to 97, power to the curveball, has a slide or two, shows some feel for a changeup. He's just, you know, another guy, like I was talking about Coderna, he's athletic. He's got a clean arm action delivery. You know, and if pitching doesn't work out, he's a switch hitting shortstop with solid power potential and speed. So, you know, tremendous value from a guy that I don't remember my last mock draft now. It's all a blur, but I think I had him going to the Reds at 17 overall, you know, in the first round, and the Pirates got him at the top of the third round.
We will not talk about this player, but the next highest ranked player to go in this draft, Tyler Whitaker, Bishop Gorman High School in Nevada, went to the Astros and was ranked number 37 in our top 250 draft prospects list.
And that was Houston's top pick. I was going to throw in there, Jason.
That
was Houston's
right.
Top pick because they lost their first two choices.
87 overall. You're listening to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. I'm Jason Ratliff here with Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo, who are currently pinpointing their favorite pick of each round of the recently concluded draft. We are into round four, and Jonathan, you're up.
I am going to go with Denzel Clark from Cal State Northridge. The A's took him close to the bottom of the fourth round. It's not often you get a college bat with a ton of upside. he's from Canada. Played for the 18U, you know, junior national team. He's got bloodlines. His cousins are Josh and Bo Naylor. His mom was an Olympic heptathlete, so you know there's a ton of athleticism. He can really run. He produced much more this year. He was kind of an under the radar guy because he hadn't done much before this year. He struck out a lot less. There's raw power. 6'5", 220. Maybe he eventually moves to right field and he could be, you know, sort of that athletic right fielder. But a lot of people think he can stay in center field. So to get that kind of upside from a college guy in the fourth round, I think is a pretty good get for the A's.
I like that pick. I'm going to take somebody similar. A lot of good sleepers in this round, and I'm disappointed you didn't go with your steer wrestling connection here, Jonathan. But I'm going to go with Christian Franklin of the Cubs, who's another premium college athlete. You know, I think when you're looking at the power and the speed and the arm, the defense and center, it's all solid to plus. He might be a 2020 guy. There is some swing and miss issues, but he has made adjustments and hit better over the last couple of seasons. I thought this guy should have been a second round pick. He went in the fourth round to the Cubs. I think he's one of these guys that if he doesn't, you know, let's say the swing and miss gets the better of him and he's not a big league regular. He's got enough tools and does enough things that if he hits a little bit, he could be a good fourth outfielder. So I really like the upside on Christian Franklin. And I think he's very, very similar. He's like a smaller version of Denzel Clark.
All right, let's move along to round five. Jonathan, your final pick.
I'm going to go with Irv Carter. Blue Jays took in the fifth round and already signed for well above slot. Slot was just north of $350,000, and they signed him for $850,000. Was committed to go to the University of Miami. teammate of Andrew Painter's, so kind of a ridiculous high school staff. Again, right-handed, projectable, 6'4". He was already up to, 94 miles an hour, but there's more to come. He's got a good slider. There's some feel for a changeup. In high school, you tend not to need it much. He has a tendency to get a little cute with his delivery, like changing the pacing, turn around like Johnny Cueto. But good athleticism. I think there'll be a consistent delivery and good control. The scouts in Florida said, some people thought he was a little bit like Tukey Toussaint, Southern Florida guy also, but an upside pick here for the Blue Jays with their fifth rounder.
So what's your mock draft have me doing here, Jason, in round 5?
I've got you going with the second pick of the round in Mitch Bratt.
Wow, that's crazy, because I am going with Mitch Bratt.
So wow.
We know each other well.
Mock work there, Jason. I'm stunned. But yes, Mitch Bratt, Canadian kid who came down to pitch at Georgia Premier Academy because it was not going to be easy to scout Canadian high school players this year because you couldn't go back and forth across the border. And, left-hander, the curveball has a chance to be a plus pitch as he gets stronger. Your fastball currently tops out at 92, but it's got some good attributes to it. He commands it well. He's got feel for throwing the changeup. Effortless delivery that repeats really well. And I was impressed, too. I think he would have gone around this range anyway, but he went and pitched against, significantly older competition in the MLB Draft League this summer. He didn't turn 18 till July 3rd, and he pitched well. And I think better days are ahead. I think Mitch Bratt's going to continue to get bigger and stronger. And I like the feel for pitching in these shows, and I like the stuff he already has. So I will go with Mitch Bratt here in round 5.
All right. So our draft of your favorite picks from the first 5 rounds includes 3 Pirates picks and a couple of Royals picks. And pretty well distributed among high school, college, and we've got catcher, shortstop, several right-handed pitchers, a couple of outfielders, so mixed it up quite a bit there. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we are going to shift gears, and instead of looking back at the 2021 draft, we are going to look forward to the 2022 draft class. That's coming up next on the MLB Pipeline Podcast.
You know what's a tough pill to swallow? Watching your team strand runners. You know what's an easy pill to swallow? The new daily multivitamin from official MLB partner Roman. The peppermint-coated pills are created by doctors and backed by science. Whether you're a 5-tool player or just looking to support your general health, the 23 ingredients target men's everyday nutrient needs and overall well-being. Visit GetRoman.com/MLB today to learn more and bring your A game every day.
Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Jason Ratliff, Jim Callis, Jonathan Mayo. We're talking draft. We've been talking 2021 draft. Now we're going to talk 2022 draft. So each year at the conclusion of that year's draft, we look ahead to the next year's draft. And we've been doing this for a while now, doing our far too early mock or far too early ranking of the next year's draft prospects. And we've done it again. Jonathan this year was in charge of putting together a top 20 list. That story should be up on the site by the time you listen to this podcast. And first, looking back at last year, just to give you an idea, last year at this time, when we looked ahead to the top 2021 draft prospects, number 1 was Kumar Rocker. Number 2 was Jack Leiter. Number 3 was Brady House. Number 4 was Judd Fabian. Number 5 was Christian Little, who ended up not being in this year's draft as he reclassified. Number 6, Braylon Bishop. Number 7, Matt McClain. Number 8, Luke Lito. Number 9, Adrian Del Castillo. And number 10, Tyree Reed. So kind of a mixed bag there in terms of guys who did, in fact, end up going at the top of the draft and some who did not. But just to give you an idea of how much things can change over the course of a year. This year's top look ahead to next year's top draft prospects goes like this. Number one, Elijah Green, an outfielder from IMG Academy in Florida. Number two, Dylan Lesko, a right-handed pitcher from Buford High School in Georgia. Number three, Jacob Berry, LSU third baseman. Number four, Jackson Ferris, another IMG Academy teammate there of Elijah Green, who is a left-handed pitcher. Number five, Tamar Johnson, a middle infielder from Mays High School in Georgia. Number six, Andrew Jones Jr., an outfielder from Georgia. Number seven, Jace Young, infielder from Texas Tech and younger brother of Josh Young. And number eight, Jason Jones, shortstop out of Braswell High School in Texas. Number nine, Brooks Lee, shortstop out of Cal Poly. And number 10, Vanderbilt shortstop Carter Young. So, Jonathan, you put this list together. It's actually 20 deep. Give us your first impressions as you talk to scouts to put this list together.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's going to change dramatically, as you pointed out. But last year's list was probably even more guesswork because of the lack of a 2020 season. And we do this before the summer showcase circuit or Cape Cod League, which didn't happen last year anyway. This list will change probably by the end of the summer, not to mention the spring. High school heavy for up top for now. I think the biggest thing that stood out to me was the lack of college arms. And if I'm not mistaken, I have just one in the top 20, Hunter Barco from Florida. I had to go through again because I couldn't quite remember, but yeah, that is true. That will, likely change, but there weren't guys that had kind of stood out in that regard. And Hunter Barco was a good, prospect a couple of years back coming out of high school, but wanted to go on to Florida and has been, part of their rotation since. I'm going to circle one guy, and I think he's become my favorite guy, and I figure I should talk about him now because he's from Georgia, and that's Jim's part of the country when we do draft stuff. So I'm going to talk about Tamar Johnson as much as I possibly can until it's kind of Jim's responsibility. But, he stood out to me starting with batting practice before the high school All-American game in Denver, where he just put on a show. And he's, he's 5'10", but he's unbelievably strong. His lower half is ridiculous. And that's where he generates his power from, that and from bat speed and how quick his hands are. Then he was really, really good in the high school home run derby. And the thing that was amazing is, he's pulling balls into the second and third deck as a left-handed hitter. And then in the game, he was perfectly happy, shooting the ball the other way. And, I think that, he's a really good hitter. There's more power than you think. He runs well. I think the only question about Tamar Johnson is what position he ends up playing. He may be a second baseman, and that high school second base profile isn't great. But I think that he's going to hit enough that he's going to stay in this neck of the woods, and he's already performing well this summer. So he is a guy that I will continue to watch, even if Jim is the one who gets to talk about him more going forward.
Left-handed Mookie Betts.
Let's not put Mookie Betts on.
Yeah, I don't.
But we've got him
to go there. I'm just going to say I think he can really hit.
He might be the best hitter in the high school class. I mean, that was my impression when we were doing prep for the high school All-America game that I did the broadcast for that you guys also attended. But I won't go Mookie Betts on him yet. But interesting, three of the top six guys on here are high school players from Georgia. I do think it looks like the college bat class is better next year than it was this year, which I think teams will be happy to see. And I was going to make a comment, Jonathan, on the pitchers. I think one of the reasons you don't have maybe as many college pitchers is I think the best guy was probably Connor Prelip at Alabama, and he had Tommy John surgery. And, Peyton Paulette at Arkansas was another really interesting guy who hurt his elbow in May, and I think he's avoided Tommy John surgery to this point. But, the college pitching class already has lost two of its better guys, at least for now. And I think that's why the college arms don't stand out as much on your list.
All right, and you talked about the summer showcase circuit, which has already begun, and several of these players just participated in the Perfect Game National Showcase, which we streamed on MLB.com and got to see quite a few of these guys, including the top two performers from the showcase. Also match up nicely with your list of the top 20, Jonathan, the top two guys on the Perfect Game National Showcase top performers list, Elijah Green and Dylan Lesko. Those two followed by Tristan Smith, a left-handed pitcher out of Boiling Springs High School in South Carolina. So a player not on your list. I think he's one of three on this top 10 performers list that are not in the top 20. Tamar Johnson was number four, Jackson Ferris, number five, Ian Ritchie Jr., a right-handed pitcher out of Bainbridge, Washington, is number six, Jason Jones, number seven, Andrew Jones, number eight, number nine, Chase Shores, another name that does not appear on the top 20 list, big right-hander out of Lee High School in Texas, 6'8", 240 pounds, reminds me a lot of a young Jim Callis. He was in high school. And number 10, Mikey Romero, a shortstop out of Orange Lutheran High School in California. Jim, you've slimmed down a bit since your days.
I was probably like going into my senior year of high school, I was probably about like 6'1", 140. So, yeah, if you put me next to Chase Shores, it would be hard to tell us apart, I think. He threw a little harder than I did though.
Just a little. I will say that I think the biggest question that maybe people can help us answer is if it's Ian Ritchie Jr. or J.R. Ritchie, the right-hander from Bainbridge, who was number six on the PG list and also in my top 20. I've seen it both ways. So if people who are listening to this actually know the answer and let us know so we can identify him correctly, because I think he's Ian on this story, and I wrote it as J.R. Ritchie.
Well, you also have Andrew Jones versus Drew Jones.
Right.
Well, I think he goes by Drew, but his name is Andrew. Like in this case, like I'm sure Ian Ritchie's name is Ian, but we don't know if he goes by Jay. These are the important things, so we know going forward how to identify these guys, because we may be talking about both of them quite a bit.
So what are they moving the JR and the Junior to be his first name? Is that what we think is going on there when he's
that's what we think, is that maybe he was called Junior and then they abbreviated that to JR.
Jim, I know you are adamantly opposed to no periods in initials, so this could end up.
I don't know if the JR is for Junior and it's not initials, do I give a special dispensation to JR Ritchie? Perhaps, but CC Sabathia, you're just doing it all. I blame CC Sabathia. He was the first who decided he no longer needed periods. JR Ritchie, I will not scorn, but CC Sabathia, I will scorn for not using the periods in his nickname. Or in his name. So, like we just start going lowercase. Why doesn't he go lowercase like E.E. Cummings and be lowercase C.C. Sabathia?
That's a great idea.
An E.E. Cummings reference in the Pipeline podcast. I think that's a first.
Yet again. All right. Let's move along. I mentioned Jonathan's top 20 2022 draft prospects list being up on MLB.com/pipeline. That, as well as the Perfect Game National Showcase top performers list. You can find both of those on MLB.com/pipeline. All right, we're going to take a break here. And when we come back, we are going to take a look at the three recent big league call-ups from our top 100 prospects list, Jarren Duran, Brandon Marsh, and Josiah Gray. That's coming up next on the MLB Pipeline podcast.
I'm Xavier Scruggs, host of The Bigs. And this ain't your average sports podcast. This is MLB's first player-to-player show. You'll hear behind-the-scenes insights from guys like Chicago White Sox shortstop Tim Anderson.
You know, I was the youngest, and, you know, being black coming up, man, it was definitely weird, you know, trying to have some locker room presence. I formed myself into a player I am today, so now there's a lot of respect that comes with that.
Los Angeles Dodgers pitcher David Price.
Double A was in Montgomery. We had six guys staying in a two-bedroom. I slept on an air mattress under the dining room table.
And my guy, St. Louis Cardinals pitcher, Jack Flaherty.
My mom was scared. She was like, it's a scary place to be in because I don't want, you know, she saw what happened to Kaepernick.
The best way to hear these conversations is to subscribe. Find the show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you listen.
Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Let's move ahead and look at some recent big league call-ups. We've had three over the course of the past week or so in Red Sox outfielder Jaron Duran, who is number 86 on our top 100 prospects list, Angels outfielder Brandon Marsh, who's number 38, and Dodgers right-hander Josiah Gray, who is number 42. Two of these players belong to teams that Jim manages, and one Jonathan, so that breaks up nicely. Jim, tell us a little bit about Jaron Duran.
Yeah, you know, and we've talked a lot about him. You know, it's kind of a cool career path. You know, seventh-round pick out of Long Beach State. You know, that's one of the very best pitcher's parks in college baseball, and he didn't hit for a lot of power there. Came into pro ball, and he tore it up, and then he tore up high Class A the next year. And we believe, I don't know if there's any great way to check this, that he's the lowest drafted player, seventh round, to play in the Futures game in his first full season of pro ball. But then, after he played in the Futures game, he really hit the wall in Double A in 2019, and then there was no season last year, so it was kind of, what exactly do we have in Jaron Duran? And then, you know, it's kind of this roller coaster. You kept hearing out of, you know, their alternate trading site last year, he's made great changes to his swing, and he's got more loft, he's using his legs more, and he's going to have power. And okay, all well and good, but like, you'd like to see it because he really didn't hit for any power in Double A. And then he went to winter ball, and he was okay during the regular season, great in the playoffs, great in the Caribbean series. And you know, so I'll admit, I mean, Jonathan, you can back me up on this. I think he might have made our preseason top 100. And I actually argued against him. And I said, look, you know, this guy put up a 634 ops in 82 games in Double A. I'd like to see him perform first. And, well, he's performed. He only played 46 games in Triple A because he was with the U.S. Olympic qualifying team. He hit 15 homers. He still has plus-plus speed. I think the big question on him is how good of a center fielder will he become, because he was a second baseman in college. His reads and roots were not great at all in the fall league in 2019. He's gotten better, but is he going to be an average center fielder? Could he be more than that? Or is he going to be one of these, you know, uses his speed to outrun his mistakes types of guys? But I mean, you're looking at a guy with impact speed and I think 20 plus homer power. You know, he's changed his approach. You know, he's more aggressive, but he's driving the ball a lot more. And as we record this on Tuesday morning, he just hit his first home run last night. First pitch he saw in the majors was a fastball from Garrett Cole, and he lined it back up the middle for a base hit, and you know, could be a real spark to a Red Sox team that's already off to a tremendous start this year. And I think eventually he'll probably be batting toward the top of their order, although they're going to kind of, I think the initial plan was to break him in easily, but I guess he was batting second last night, so maybe sooner rather than later.
Yeah, he looked like he was well on his way to at least a 2020 season, if not potentially a run at a 30-30 season at AAA with 15 homers and 12 stolen bases through just 46 games.
Will you count his major league stats? Will you combine them for him, Jason? Can he, if he goes 15-18 in the big leagues, will you count that as a 30-30 season?
Not for our list of minor league 2020 and 30-30 seasons, okay. But I don't think we've ever done that to incorporate big league stats as well. It would be interesting to see that list. All right, Jonathan, you're up.
Yeah, Brandon Marsh, was so happy to see him get up to the big leagues because he has shown tremendous tools pretty much from the second that he signed, but you know, he's just had trouble staying healthy. Variety of injuries that he's had over the years. Most recently was a shoulder problem that kind of shut him down for a chunk of the time at the alternate site last year and slowed him this year. He missed about a month. But before he got called up, he was kind of red hot. And pretty much wherever he's been, once he gets in a rhythm, he hits. You know, super advanced approach from the left side of the plate. you know, so he's been able to hit for average. He gets on base. He runs well, and he plays a plus defensive center field, but also is very comfortable in the corners with more than enough arm for people wondering, well, what happens if and when Mike Trout, comes back up and, took an 0-for in his first game and then had three hits in game number two with a double in his first big league run batted in. I think there's more power to come. He is a hitter first, and the power has just shown up in sort of fits and bursts. But we're talking about a 6'4" guy. He's going to, continue to add strength, and I think he's going to learn how to tap into the raw power he has more without giving up any of that hitability. But a really exciting player, plus makeup, and, for my money, one of the better interviews. We don't have an interview grade, a talk grade. I wish we did. But it was very excited for him to get up there and show people what he can do. I thought it was interesting that, they needed an outfielder and they brought him up and not Joe Adell, who had been up already, struggled, but had been, hitting well and with bunches of homers in AAA, but they brought up Marsh, maybe because I think they're more comfortable with his defensive ability and his defensive flexibility in the outfield.
Yeah, Joe Adell so far this year at AAA, hitting .285 with 19 home runs in 63 games, 88 strikeouts, the number to watch with Adell, obviously, 88 strikeouts in 270 at bats. All right, Jim, Josiah Gray.
Yeah, JoJo Gray, super interesting guy, kind of like Jaron Duran, not like a prime prospect when he got drafted. I mean, this was a guy who was a shortstop at the NCAA Division II level at Lemoyne for two seasons, went to the Cape Cod League in 2017, became a full-time pitcher, and took off, had a great year at Lemoyne in 2018, was a supplemental second-round pick in June that year. And then he was part of really what I think has a chance to be one of the more one-sided trades in recent memory. The Dodgers were looking to clear 40-man roster spots. We've talked for years about, obviously they've had a lot of success at the big league level. They've had a lot of success at the minor league level. They have a 40-man roster crunch. So they were looking to clear salary, clear roster spots. They made this trade with the Reds, where they traded Matt Kemp, Yasiel Puig, Alex Wood, and Kyle Farmer and some cash for Homer Bailey. They're just taking on his contract and two prospects. And the two prospects they got were Jeter Downs and Josiah Gray. And both those guys have quickly blew up into top 100 prospects in their first season in the Dodger system. Jeter Downs wound up being the key prospect in the Mookie Betts trade with the Red Sox, and Gray, his first, really his only full season in the system so far. He was Los Angeles's minor league pitcher of the year. His stuff continues to get better. 92 to 97 mile an hour fastball that's got explosive life. He tightened up his slider and curve at the alternate training site last year. Changeup's more work in progress, but he's super athletic. He repeats his delivery well. He commands the fastball despite the excessive life on it. And I mean, he's been really dominant. I mean, he's pitched 198 innings in pro ball, 228 strikeouts, 50 walks, 189 opponent average, just 7 home runs. He had a shoulder impingement this year, which kept him out for a while. Otherwise, I think he probably would have been up in the big leagues. He missed almost 2 months. He probably would have been up already. But, it just seems like it never ends for the Dodgers, that their farm system just continues to produce impact guy after impact guy after impact guy. And I don't know if they'll use him as a starter or if they'll use an opener and bring him in relief. But, Kershaw's hurt. Who knows what's going to happen with Trevor Bauer, if he's ever going to pitch again for the Dodgers. They need starters. And they just like, okay, well, we've got this guy throws 92-97 with nasty breaking stuff and he competes off the charts and throws strikes. We'll just fill him in. It just seems like it never ends for the Dodgers.
All right. So those are our three most recent big league call-ups from the top 100 prospects list. We are going to continue talking about the top 100 prospects list here on the MLB Pipeline podcast. with our newest addition to that list, and that is Bryson Stott of the Philadelphia Phillies, who moved on to the list when Alek Manoah graduated just recently here. And those are, interestingly, the number 9 and number 10 prospects from our 2019 top 100 draft prospects list. Now, I was looking back at that list, and guys, the 2019 top 100 draft prospects list that we put out in May 2019 went like this: Adley Rutschman, Bobby Witt Jr., Andrew Vaughn, CJ Abrams, JJ Bleday, Riley Green, Hunter Bishop, Nick Lodolo, Bryson Stott, Alek Manoah. So, you know, all the guys in front of Stott there are current top 100 prospects, or, well, Vaughn has graduated now, but was preseason top 14. But most of those guys, Rutschman number 2, Witt number 7, Abrams 8, Bleday 14, Green 15, Lodolo 43, and Hunter Bishop 65. Alek Manoah was number 90 before he graduated off the list. But, you know, Stott kind of the outlier there in terms of not being on the top 100. He didn't, you know, he performed pretty well in his professional debut. So why the late entry here?
Well, he was on the list for a while. He just got put, you know, last year was an odd year in which we didn't have many guys graduate, and we had to accommodate the guys coming in from the draft. And he got pushed off the list. So I think that was it more than anything, wasn't it, Jonathan?
Yeah, I think I feel like Stott's one of these guys who, you know, since, you know, the re-rank after that drafter, if he was on the top 100, he got pushed off. He's always been in that like 101 to 110 range. And, you know, he's been good. You know, you mentioned his pro debut. He had a solid pro debut. You know, mostly in short season ball. And then, you know, this year, which is really his first full year, he's made it up to double A. And again, he's put up good numbers. He gets on base a lot. He draws a ton of walks. When he was in high A, he walked as much as he struck out. His strikeout rate has gone up a bunch since he got promoted to double A. So the strikeout rate's a little higher this year for what he had done in college and previously. It's at almost 25.5% for the year, but he still draws walks. There's some good power. He's left-handed hitting shortstop. I think one of the things with Bryson Stott is that I think he's going to be like a very solid everyday big leaguer. But he none of his tools like really jump off the page. He's got a bunch of 55s, you know, he's not plus in anything, but he does everything really well. He might end up being better than what his grades, the entire package, might make him a better player when all is said and done. But I think that's one of the reasons why he's sort of always been on that kind of top 100 adjacent list.
I think the biggest knock on Stott, if I'm not mistaken, do you guys recall this, is that he puts ranch on his ice cream.
That's disgusting.
You remember when Amir Garrett.
I would immediately vote for his.
Let's remove him from the top 100 immediately.
Yes, that's poor judgment. It makes me question his judgment in general. I did interview him in spring training a couple years ago, and Either Bryce Harper's mom was his sister's cheerleading coach, or his mom was Bryce Harper's sister's cheerleading coach. there's a Bryce Harper connection,
and it involves that I'm
not remembering exactly.
It was Amir Garrett who tipped us off to Stott putting ranch on his ice cream. We have to check with Amir and see if that was just slander, or if that's
okay. I've got the scoop here now. I found the story.
The scoop Bryce on Harper, the ice cream?
Not on the ice cream. I did not ask him. I would not have interviewed him if I.
Well played, Jason.
I hate ranch dressing. Not as much as I hate mayo, but I as just to clarify, I love Jonathan.
Wow,
mayo.
He's listening to you right now.
Yes,
right.
Seriously.
Hate mayo. Hate
and I'm
ranch,
not muted. I'm not muted currently. So,
but no, it's Bryce Harper's sister cheerleaded for Bryson Stott's mom, Shauna, who's a cheerleading coach at El Dorado High in Las Vegas. So there you go.
Is it cheerleaded or cheer led?
Well, I said cheerleading. I don't know. I don't know what the past tense. You'd have to ask Bryson Stott that. Perhaps he would know that. But what the cool thing was is that Bryce Harper kept telling him for months that if he was there at 14, the Phillies were going to take him. And then when he got picked, he called him and said, told you so. So there you go.
All right. Let's wrap up this edition of the Pipeline Podcast with a question in the mailbag. This one comes from Joe. Joe's handle, and everybody, I'll expect everyone to remember this, is Joe13231556. He says,
Joe's not a bot, is he?
Like is that his phone number? What is that?
Like, are we sure Joe's an actual human being?
Joe bot.
It's a little scary.
We don't know. This could be, we could be answering the question from a bot right now. That's a good question nonetheless. How does where a player gets drafted affect his chances at being an MLB top 100 prospect, if at all? For example, Ty Madden fell to number 32. Does that mean he isn't going to be a top 100 prospect, even though he was ranked number 9 on your draft rankings, whereas if he was drafted at, say, 12 or 13? Thanks.
Yeah, it's a great question, and I'm going to give a non-answer answer, and maybe Jonathan Mayo, who I like much more than Mayo, will give a better answer than me. Like, when I look at these things when we're doing the rankings, I do put more faith into our rankings, which I believe reflect an industry consensus, than necessarily where a guy got drafted. Because guys can move up or down based on signability, but that wasn't really the case with Ty Madden. That said, like, we usually do kind of look at an amalgamation of where he went and where we thought he should go. It's not like an average, but, you know, 9 plus 32, that averages out to 20, and the 20th best player typically would make the top 100. I don't know what we're going to do with Ty Madden, Jonathan. I'm inclined. If you'd asked me before the draft, I would have said, yes, probably going to vote for Ty Madden on the top 100. And I'm stubborn, so maybe I'll still do that. But I haven't looked at that process quite yet. So I don't know what the answer to that will be.
Yeah, you know, I think he's sort of separate. We'll talk about Madden for a second, then sort of in a larger general sense, you know. My gut, and we haven't dug into this, as you know, Jim says, you know, is to kind of go with what the scouting industry was saying, you know, and why did, you know, for him getting to where he is, there were many teams that could have taken him and didn't. So I think that will probably enter into our conversation, and we'll run, you know, we'll run the list by some people and things like that. In a larger sense, it's not just where a guy goes. You know, for instance, Bubba Chandler was a third round pick. I might be more inclined to include someone like that. The high school guys who slip and then get paid as if they're first rounders might still be in the top 100. You know, he might have a better chance of cracking that re-ranked top 100 than Ty Madden, who's a college guy who's, you know, who didn't go, you know, as early as we thought he might. So, I mean, we have to dig into all of it, but, you know, we don't take where they were drafted alone in determining how they get into the top 100, but the reasons why they went where they went will certainly figure into consideration.
Because, like, for instance, looking at another guy, Khalil Watson, we had ranked 4th. He went 16th. That wasn't based on talent. We will rank Khalil Watson will not be the 16th ranked draftee on the top 100. He will rank higher than that. And I mean, I think we felt pretty good about the top 3, Jonathan, didn't we? You know, Marcelo Meyer 1, Jack Leiter 2, Jordan Lawler 3.
Yep.
Even though Leiter went 2, Meyer went 4, and Lawler went 6, I feel like after the end of the long draft process, we kind of felt like those were the top 3 guys, and we felt pretty good about that order.
Agreed.
That mid-season top 100 prospects list will be coming soon in the coming weeks, so stay tuned for that. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and thanks to Joe, possibly a bot, for your question. That is going to be a wrap for this week's MLB Pipeline Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss an episode. If you're enjoying the show or have any suggestions, leave us a rating and a review. Thanks for listening, everybody. See you next week.
Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually, we just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo. Or we avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about. With a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication, It's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. The healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/MLB and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/MLB today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. Roman is the official partner of Major League Baseball. That's GetRoman.com/MLB. GetRoman.com/MLB.
It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.